I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a hottie with a far body.
Exactly. Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, The Lore Boys. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, here to talk to you guys today about Balder, Freya, and the trickster god of Norse mythology.
who I've never heard of.
With me, of course, as always, is Mr. Never Heard of Nobody.
Peter O'Donoghue. Don't know who you are. Don't ask.
And Sir Gasps a Lot.
James Miller. The poll, it predicted it all.
Can you imagine if people changed horoscopes for polls and it was just like they thought they were predicting the future?
but that's how democracy works, dude. Why don't they make the weather a democracy?
You're right, we should vote on it. 21 every day, no questions asked. ASMR rain at night.
I don't want no fucking liberals voting on my weather.
The thunderstorm was stolen or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
name me a single hurricane that's ever worked in the real world.
Oh my god.
Jamie mentioned that this was a viewer request in a way. This episode actually comes as a result of a poll that was listed on Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. So if you're interested in supporting the show, maybe getting a say in what lore comes up next. We don't do it all the time. We don't necessarily even do it often, but sometimes we have done polls before. We also do stuff like bonus content, where today you'll get some bonus content about God of War and Norse mythology, like who's that giant eagle in hell, you know, and a couple other cool little tidbits. So tune in tomorrow if you're interested in joining. patreon.com/loreboys. And Peter, I believe, has some names of people who joined just this past week.
I do. Speaking of Knights of the Round Table, we have Colin Pendergrass, which is a knight. It's just a fake knight name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a good name coming up. I remember
Reg Allen or Reg Allen. Thank you very much. Marks Wallace, who does not look like a bitch. I think that might be a Pulp Fiction thing. Jack Butts is a fantastic one.
Yeah, I liked his name. That was a good name. Yeah.
I'll jack your butt.
I'm a Jack's Butts man, not much of a Jack's Tits man. And finally, Blorful McChorf, who I think might have resubbed or something. There's a dual notification there. Regardless, thank you, five.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, guys.
Does Blorful McGlorf sound familiar, or did you just have a weird dream last night as well?
No, that was real. That's someone.
So this episode is a part two, technically, regarding God of War 4 lore specifically. I don't think part one should be required reading for this episode, but this episode will probably be better if you know some of the stuff that we talked about last time, like the dwarves Brocken Sindri and Jormungand, the world serpent, and some other cool stuff from Norse mythology. That said, this episode contains spoilers for God of War 4 2018. It contains just about the biggest spoiler you can get in that game. So if you're not into that, run out, buy God of War 4. Not Ragnarok, not the new one, buy the second newest one. Beat it, and then come back and listen to this episode.
I got it for $10 in 2019. They are probably just giving away copies of this game at this time. Like, yeah. Don't worry about it. We're not asking to break the bank.
This may contain spoilers for God of War Ragnarok, but only as far as the original Norse myth would contain spoilers for the game. In doing the research for these episodes, I realized, like, if you'd known the Norse myth, there would have been a lot of, like, very cool foreshadowing, which we'll get into what exactly that is. Stuff like the mistletoe arrows, which are significant in Norse myth.
Yeah.
That said, The other possible spoilers for God of War Ragnarok is, of course, Peter, who, son of a bitch, has been playing the game.
I almost
cut Peter out of this episode and almost just like message Jamie and be like, we got to just do it, you and me, because I, you know, we can't really trust Peter to not react to certain things a certain way. So my hope is that by calling him out on air and putting him on blast will really make him not spoil anything for myself specifically.
I think a couple days ago, Jamie, bless up, got promoted. So we went to our local watering hole and I had the exact same comment. I was just like, I don't know if I can just not react on webcam to give shit away.
Because like not,
you're going to see my eyebrows go up like a 1/1 trillionth of a millimeter and you're going to be like, oh, fuck, he got me.
Pete's either going to react is just like completely say the main spoiler of the game and be like, it's not even a major spoiler. He's going to tell you like what happens in the last 15 minutes of the game. So be like, it's not even a major spoiler. Or he's just going to not react at all. And then we're going to know that something happens there or that we're on the nose.
Exactly. Damned if you do. I'm really, really between a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah. So I normally, when we record, I have a notepad file up over my camera because I don't want to look at myself when we're recording. I want to look at you two. I think I'm going to put a window on top of old Petey here, on top of old Petey's face too. So
it's the Jamie show today.
Staring into Jamie's eyes this whole episode.
How many socks do I have under the chair behind me?
Three.
Four?
I think
that
three.
Is that white one a sock? What is that white thing?
A receipt.
Yeah. Okay. In my head, I was like, that looks like a receipt that fell out of a grocery bag when you were unloading in the kitchen, meaning it's been kicked down the hallway.
Yeah. And around the corner. Yeah.
I order food a lot, so it's probably an ordered food receipt.
Oh, even better.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's a crooked pizza receipt. That's what he got there.
Okay, so let's start talking about God of War and or Norse mythology.
Okay.
We're going to begin talking about, wouldn't you know it, the gods. So we talked a little bit.
To cover my own ass here, sorry. Mm-hmm. Jamie, you've played God of War, right?
I played all but Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Okay. So good. I just want to make sure we can talk about spoilers for the base game too. Just
Did you play the PS Vita God of War, Jamie?
I played all the main series. I guess
Ghosts of Olympus.
If we're gonna be picky.
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean, for the Ragnarok spoilers, I'm really not looking at Peter because like I'm also very excited because there's some really cool stuff in here and like some cool tinfoil hat lore boys. Canon theory that I have,
right.
And I would love if that I nailed it without it being in Ragnarok yet, you know. But yeah. I won't know until Peter reacts or I play the game.
Well, this is good because I can finally play the game now that Pete's done. I can steal the copy and
yeah, exactly,
and get it done because yeah, we'll have already talked about it.
Yeah.
So the Aesir and the Vanir, we talked about a bit on the last episode. They're two distinct tribes of gods in Norse myth, with the warlike Aesir commonly depicted as the ones in charge over the Vanir, who are responsible for wealth, fertility, and commerce instead of ruling and war. The Aesir you guys know and love include Odin, his wife Frigg, Tyr, Tyr is the god of war, and Thor, the old German word for thunder.
Okay.
You guys probably remember from last week, too, like Odin was also a god of war. Thor is also a god of war. Odin was like specifically the god of war relating to like strategy. Thor is the god of war relating to like battle and fighting more specifically.
What's Frigg do?
Frigg is, so we'll get into Frigg a little bit because Frigg, by a lot of interpretations, is just Freya, who is actually a Vanir, and we'll talk about Freya in a little bit.
But you can't say Freya in front of your parents. You have to say Frigg.
Yeah. Frigg. The TV edit of God of War, they always they always say Frigg instead of fuck.
So Tyr was the god of war concerned with the formalities of war. So treaties, justice, binding of oaths, that sort of stuff. In God of War,
he's the nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. In God of War 4, as you descend into Tyr's temple, Kratos and his son Atreus remark on how Tyr was considered the most respected by mankind and giants alike. Mimir's head remarks to Atreus while trying to temper the boy's newfound hubris at learning that he's a demigod. You can either serve yourself or put your godhood into the service of others, like Tyr did. A god of war, but one who fought for peace, had a reputation for being heroic and lawful, using his power and knowledge to stop wars rather than start them. That's Mimir saying that to Atreus.
God of War 1, 2, 3, except it's tier, and you just talk all the gods down. Everything's fine.
It would be like Papers, Please. It would be like a document simulator.
Right.
Jamie, do me a favor, put a pin in that and like keep it very close, okay? Because we're gonna talk about God of War 1, 2, 3 compared to tier. And how you know, in the throughout the God of War games, there's been very few gods that have shown themselves worthy of Kratos's trust, right? Or like Kratos's respect in any kind of sense. But as they're kind of talking, it's Atreus kind of talking about how good Tyr is, and then Mimir kind of echoing that as well. Kratos says something along the lines of like, no god can be trusted during that, right? So in the game's myth, Odin grows distrustful of Tyr and his fraternizing with giants instead of stealing the giants' secrets for the Aesir. So Odin had apparently sent Tyr, like, go talk with the giants and steal their secrets and bring them back to us. But Odin thinks that Tyr is working with the giants. Mimir confirms this in the game as likely true, and that he did so because Tyr felt responsible for the suffering Odin had inflicted upon the giants. So he's basically like, hey, this guy is kind of a dick. I'm here to kind of help you guys. Mimir talks about how the gate to Jotunheim is missing in the game, like missing from Tyr's temple. And Mimir says that only would have been possible with the giants and Tyr working together, essentially.
Okay. So I love how in God of War 4, they always talk about how like distrustful and paranoid Odin is. That's why he's got like ghost ravens all over the place. Everywhere. I like the fact he sends like a spook to narc on the giants and then immediately distrusts his own spy. He's just like, well, I taught him everything he knows. I taught him how to lie. What if he's lying to me? What if he goes native with the giants and starts sending him like Jotunheim disinformation, basically?
Yeah, yeah. just Odin sticking his spear into a giant bag of cocaine and doing like lines off the end of it.
Yeah, he really is like, that 70s era Aesir government, basically, right?
That's it. Send Thor to look after Tyr. As soon as Thor leaves, like, my own son, I can't believe he would betray me.
he's got like the tissue boxes on his shoes, basically. Yeah. He's like living in a hospital bed.
Yeah. So while Tyr's direct involvement with giants is not necessarily corroborated in the Norse myth, he is still regarded very much as a good guy, TM. Honorable, trustworthy, all that good stuff. Okay. More than that, his trustworthy demeanor was even exploited by the other Aesir at times, as told in the most famous myth regarding Tyr. So this is an excerpt from Britannica.com's article on Tyr. It is in character as a guarantor of contracts, guardian of oaths, that the most famous myth about him may be understood. As a guarantee of good faith, he placed his hands between the jaws of the monstrous wolf Fenrir, while the gods, pretending sport but intending a trap, bound the wolf. When Fenrir realized he had been tricked, he bit off Tyr's hand, hence Tyr's identification as the one-handed god. Oh. So the Aesir gods, basically Odin, Thor, the rest of them, basically go to have a plan where they're like, we want to trap Fenrir, the monstrous wolf, right? So they go to Tyr and they say, hey, Tyr, we want some sport with Fenrir. We just want to like hunt him for fun and like catch him, release, we'll let him go kind of thing. So they tricked Tyr and Fenrir, and Tyr was so, he had told Fenrir like, I won't move my hand. You can bite my hand if they trick you, because he believed the Aesir so much that when he'd let the wolf bite his hand off, essentially. Okay. That's how serious your boy is about commitment. Okay.
Fenrir bought Twitter. It's about free speech. He can bite my hand off if it's not.
I've beaten Fenrir in retail WoW. In one of the recent expansions, you have to go up like this crazy long slide, and you go through a portal, and you're in like a meadow area, and you fight a giant wolf named Fenrir. You get to kill him. It's fun.
It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, very common symbol in a lot of like Western media, I guess Eastern too, with the FromSoft series Dark Souls. You fight Sif, I believe it is, the giant wolf.
Yeah.
Right.
Also in a meadow. Nice. So like I said before, it's rare in the God of War series that the gods are portrayed as anything but self-centered, controlling, manipulative creatures. Tyr seems to be an outlier, for sure. That is heavily reinforced in the 2018 release.
It made way more sense in God of War OG when it was the Greek gods who for 5,000 years have been portrayed as reckless and self-centered, right? So like Kratos' bias is also like in canon.
Yeah. Now, please look under your guys' seats. There.
What?
You're gonna find some tinfoil hats.
I did.
which should protect your brain from the particularly spectacular Lore Boys canon that's about to follow. So Jamie, grab that pin where you talked about what if it was Tyr in the original trilogy.
Still looking for my hat. All it is receipts down here.
Yeah, receipts and socks. I got Paul socks under my seat.
Okay, put the pin in it. Yeah, Tyr. Okay.
So when the Romans came north and encountered the Norse culture sometime after the death of Jesus, right?
Right.
They encountered the Norse culture and the Norse gods, right? There's a lot of swapping of stories about their beliefs, their religions, their stories from each other's respective cultures. And like any you know, pantheon in history that old, there's usually like a mishmashing and kind of like an overlap between the different stories that get told, right? And it's probably a result of this, like over 1,000 years, you know, they would tell stories from each other to each other, back to each other, and like it would morph that way. Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot during the last episode about how much of the more modern Norse myth is heavily influenced by Christianity. Christianity arrived in the region around 1000 CE.
Gross.
I don't get it.
Just kidding. Just kidding. I don't know. It's just a funny thing to say.
Oh, Christianity arriving caught you.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, generally the arrival of Christianity is an ill omen for the locals.
I was looking for a dirty word. So around 1000 CE, Christianity arrives. Before then, however, the early Roman pantheon was also pretty heavily compared to the Norse pantheon. And for the most part, it seems like the two cultures accepted their counterparts as extensions of the same god in many ways. Awesome. Tyr, when viewed by the Romans, was considered the counterpart to Mars. Indeed, the Roman calendar's second day of the work week was once known as Dies Marti, or Mars's Day, before becoming Tyr's Dagger, or Tuesday, in Anglo-Saxon. Oh,
or in French, Mardi, M-A-R-D-I.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Tuesday.
Yeah, so Tyr is the parallel to the Roman god Mars. Now, Mars also has a counterpart in the Greek pantheon. Do you guys want to guess who?
That's Ares.
It's Ares.
Yeah.
God of war in the Greek pantheon, was once offered a promise of servitude by a mortal Kratos about to die in battle.
Yeah.
As Ares' tool and overcome with bloodlust, Kratos is said to kill his own wife and daughter, kicking off the whole franchise.
Right.
So this is Tyr, the very calm and measured guy's counterpart in the Greek pantheon, is the rage-filled god of war in the first game, and he's the final boss of the first game, right?
He's hot and blooded. Check it and see.
Yeah. So, I'd love for this to be a deliberate nod in some ways. And like when I was doing this episode, I was like, I have to imagine that, you know, when they were making God of War 4, like way in early, when they were just in the drafting stages, they must have been like,
yeah, like,
okay,
2014 or something.
You know, how do we do this? Does he revisit does he do the Greek pantheon? Do we do the Roman pantheon? No, that's too close. And then somebody must have like looked at the Norse pantheon and like everything falls into place so well. Okay. So Tyr is now the god of war. It is the counterpart to Ares, who started Kratos' journey in the original trilogy. But he's measured, he's controlled. He's never taken by a blind, raging bloodlust. Now,
wait a second. Can I just like pop off the tinfoil hat for a second? Are you insinuating that the documents, the bureaucrat, set off the quintrilogy by manipulating Ares into sending this guy into the Norse myth?
So I see it more as like the evil, like, the rage half of this god that started everything, and everything could kind of finish with Tyr's hand. So it's like, it starts with like two halves of the same, it starts with one half of the same god, finishes with the other half of the same god. And it starts off with the bad, but it finishes with the good.
Yeah. If we consider them the same god, like you're both exactly like I'm just kind of in a realm here. So
we've got our own, Bohemian Grove is our realm on the world tree. Right.
Regardless of like what the in-game rationale would be, like as a storytelling device and a storytelling medium, as metaphor, it's really cool to see how Kratos in the original trilogy is so much like Ares, rage filled and violent, while in God of War 4 he is much subdued, much more measured, much more controlled, just somewhat preoccupied with justice and what's right, and also has the entire game Kratos is filling an oath. That's like the point of the game. He's filling the oath that he made to his wife to spread her ashes at the highest peak. And it's just like, so he starts the first trilogy exactly like Ares, and then he starts the second trilogy exactly like Tyr.
My dad has a
great
My dad has a quest for me and my brothers to go to somewhere in the northern United States when he passes to spread his ashes. I wonder if I'll have to fight any gods on the way. at the U.S. border.
Only if your dad, and we'll get into this later because this is kind of a spoiler, but only if your dad's brother pissed off the gods and they're secretly chasing the ashes, the dead ashes, not chasing you.
Oh, Bob's ashes. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, when you were saying that we needed to put our God of War conspiracy hats, I thought you were making just like, did the writers think 5D chess think so far ahead that they retcon Tyr into the first game? Not just like the parallels between the gods and their pantheons. Because you're just like, yeah.
I mean, I say, so like what this means for Tyr in the rest of the trilogy, who knows? Maybe Peter. Right. I'm not looking at him. Maybe he doesn't even feature very prominently. Maybe his allegiance to the giants has been manipulating Kratos all along. We all know how Kratos typically responds to that sort of thing, but we also know, as we're going to get into, like, time travel is absolutely established canon, and we'll get into why. It's, like, confirmed 100%. No doubt it's confirmed.
You know what's scary with Pete, too? His eyebrows are just the clearest to see out of all of us.
Yeah, I know.
My hair's really good eyebrows.
It's great eyebrows.
Like trying to hide those clues, you know? I was watching. I'm like, wow, you can see everything on those things.
I taught Jamie Morse code since I've been unemployed. I've taken on a hobby, and I'm just signaling to him right now when something's a spoiler.
He's doing them both at different times, man. He's sending me two messages at once.
Yeah, you got like right hand, left hand, draw like writing it all down.
Jamie suddenly like stands up at his desk, grabs all his receipts. 1 second, I'll be right back. Runs out to a grabs a lantern, runs to a horse, like starts galloping into the night.
Yeah, that's why I keep my receipts closed. I need
because I'm gonna give spoilers for God of War Ragnarok on a podcast. You need to be a little
Like whatever Tyr's involvement is, I just think like it's cool that it's set up. Maybe they don't do anything with it, and like it's just the metaphor of like the God of War in Greece was this, and it was still it was how Kratos was. And now the God of War here is this, and it's what Kratos is.
That's very cool.
Well, you know what else would be perfect symmetry if the God of War turn war backwards. Between the God of Raw, and he's a wrestler.
Oh,
or
two.
I guess, right?
It's fucking Raw. Oh no, that would be somebody who doesn't like the God Raw, because he'd be like,
it's fucking Raw. Isn't there a Egyptian god named Raw or something?
Yeah, it's a sun god, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah.
So maybe that they'll go for the nine, and the last three will be Raw, because Raw is backwards war.
I
don't think ancient Egypt had a W. I'm pretty sure it's just R-A.
I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about a few things. I was thinking about God of War and how it's such good. And I was thinking about this maybe specifically, but how and I was comparing it to like Cyberpunk, which is a game that we all like, right?
Yeah,
I think Cyberpunk is a really good story, and I think this is really good storytelling. And I think I prefer really good storytelling to really good story. Where like the way that this is all delivered in like kind of piecemeal and like slowly, and there's foreshadowing and all that stuff, is like really, really cool. And Cyberpunk is a great game and it's got a great story, but like the story is just like, it's cyberpunk and sci-fi and it's just like weird and wacky and fun. But the voice acting is good, you know, the dialogue options are good and everything, but because you have like branching dialogue and you have dialogue choices and you can choose like different factions and stuff to go with, it limits your ability to tell like a really good story. Mm-hmm. Whereas God of War is like super linear, right? As far as like the main game is concerned, it's like there's only one ending. There's only like each cutscene only has one way that it can go. You know what I mean? The only variability is like what armor Kratos is wearing in the cutscene.
Which is why they have so much control over where the camera looks when you're coming over the ledge or whatever and stuff. Because they can tell and show their story exactly how they want to.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Enough about the Aesir. Let's talk about the Vanir for a bit. So the Vanir, by comparison to the Aesir, feature only a single name I think you boys would recognize, which is Freya.
Okay.
Freya's in the games. I just said also Frigg in a lot of ways is considered to just be Freya, and just, you know, they're on the sites that I saw, they have like a, here's how the etymology makes it look like they would be the same word at some point, but I'm not going to ask that, obviously.
I can't remember, but like there are characters who use Freya's name. It's her nickname is Frigg. Isn't it? Mir called her Frigg or something like that. It's like Marge and Midge for like
I don't remember. I don't remember in the original game or the original game in God of War 4. It's possible it happened. I don't think that's, this is not a spoiler that I would even, like I would even call that a spoiler. Like they're, I think particularly for the purposes of this retelling, it they're going to be the same person no matter what. And I can kind of touch on why I think that'll be, but just some of the stuff that Freya says, even in God of War 4, I'll keep calling it the first game by mistake, but I mean God of War 4.
Yeah.
Even in God of War 4, she's gonna say stuff that's gonna make it seem like she's probably his only husband. That said, she only has one son with him, or one child with him, who we'll also talk about today.
Okay.
So Freya, which is Old Norse for just lady, is wild. Hey, lady, is widely considered the most renowned of the Norse goddesses. She's in charge of love, fertility, battle, and death.
Okay. Quick combo. Also, like not necessarily God of War, but like. Real close with like a god of battle. I guess it's like without the documentation of Tyr, right?
Yeah, they're like Norse. It's just like they're all gods of war. Like, yeah. They're just all almost all of them. So Freya is also the archetype of the Volva, which are shamans in Old Norse culture who practice magic known as satyr.
Isn't that a part of a vagina?
It is a part of a vagina.
Okay.
I didn't want to talk about it.
It is.
I can't believe the Christians can scrub this from history. they're shamans. So like
shamans,
actual shamans in like old Viking time, ye old Viking times would have been called Volva. And they practice the magic that they practice is known as satyr. So this is from Daniel McCoy, who we was a primary source on the last episode. Satyr is a form of pre-Christian Norse magic and shamanism concerned with discerning the course of fate and working within its structure to bring about change, which was done by symbolically weaving new events into being. To do this, the practitioner, with ritual die staff in hand, entered an ecstatic trance in order to be able to interact with the world of spirit. A die staff is literally something used to weave cloth.
I want that job. You just like make shirts and tell people what's going to happen in the future and don't go to war.
Yeah. Is it the tool you use on a loom that we talked about last week?
No, this is like pre loom in this culture anyway, but it's like a hand loom. It's a die staff. So it's like two prongs, like a two prong fork essentially. And you just use that to like just weave the fabric into those two, which lets you create a weave. So the Vanir in particular, as opposed to the Aesir, are the practitioners of Satyr. They're the witches and the wizards of Norse mythology. Like any good witch, Freya was loved by pigs, and in turn, pigs were sacred to her. In God of War 2018, when Kratos and Atreus first meet Freya, it's over the body of a boar they were hunting. Which Freya was upset about and basically blamed them for trying to kill her friend. But in the Norse myth, pigs were sacred to her and she was loved by pigs in turn.
Wow. Worship's kind of like how am I tying this together? It's kind of like the internet. I feel like pigs follow ladies around on the internet too, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Pigs follow ladies around wherever they go.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why Freya just means lady. They warned us.
Yeah. A lady.
Yeah, this is the weave of the satyr, right?
But yeah, exactly. Just the vulva. Predicting tusked boars at a construction site, just yelling at a woman. It's just like hanging on the beams, like regular pigs, with like having vests and their little helmets.
Ew, look at the pork chops on. Look at the pork chops on that girl.
You've got the cement truck is just like compost coming out of it.
Yeah, that's true. It's just slop.
Yeah, just slop. Lunch time, boys. kick off the slop. Freya was known to ride a boar with golden bristles at times. At other times, she rode in a chariot drawn by cats. Freya was has the privilege of taking half the souls of those who fall in battle to her great hall, Folkvanger, while the rest can be taken by Odin to Valhalla.
Okay.
So she gets half of all souls that die in battle.
That's divorce for you.
Yeah, exactly. They split it right down the middle, right?
Yeah. I remember the pig. And he does have like yellow tribal paint on him, which is kind of, I guess, a hint to the gold there.
Was he yellow? I watched it yesterday. I want to say it was more blue, but
no, he's like beige or something. He's a regular looking pig, but he's got like the war paint on him.
He definitely has war paint on him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Aesir and the Vanir were often at odds. The poetic Edda, the source for basically all Norse mythology, mentions that the war between the two groups, known as the Aesir-Vanir War, was the first ever war. So this is the first war ever fought. In one cutscene,
that would explain why every single character is a god of war. If we all found out about them through this, right?
Exactly, right. The only ones that survived were deemed god of war, gods of war.
Yeah. Right.
So the Aesir and the Vanir. I just read that. In one cutscene with Freya, Atreus comments that his mother didn't say much about the Vanir, just that they're always at war with the Aesir. So also holds true in the God of War games.
Yeah.
They still thought that Freya was just some Force Witch at the time. Whenever he said that, not understanding that she was a Vanir god herself.
Right. The only one we know.
The only one that
had been like kicked out and like sent there, right? She complains about that.
Yeah, which is we'll get
the only
into
one that
well.
We know, or the only one that I know is Freya the Vanir.
The only one that I think Peter and Jamie would know specifically.
Okay. Yeah.
So okay. I get like Gulvig is one of them who we'll talk about, but also probably just Freya.
Gulvig.
I'll read you some of the other ones. You guys can tell me if you recognize it. There's Freya, there's Freyr, who I think we talked about on the last episode. So you guys should know that one.
Freyr Jacques.
Yeah. it's just Freya's brother. There's Njord, who's the god of the sea, the Vanir god of the sea, who okay. I also think we talked about on the last episode.
Njord and Fjord. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, who is Freya and Freyr's father. There's Nerthus. Like I don't think you guys know any of these.
Nerthus sounds like such a fucking nerd, man.
It's it's Garfield's girlfriend.
Yeah. Nerthus.
There's like a program that we use for get our payment software at work is like Nethrus, which makes me think Nethrus. Of Nerthus. Yeah.
To think of Freya's chariot being pulled by Garfield and Nermal.
Yeah. Garfield kart racing, man. Nermal OP.
There's a tear there holding his hand in Odie's mouth.
Odin.
Odie, yes. Odin. Yeah, okay, so the war, the Aesir-Vanir War, is kicked off when the almost second Vanir in our story, Gulvig, was captured by the Aesir. This is Henry Adam Bellow's translation of the poetic Edda, and it reads, "The war I remember, the first in the world, when the gods with spears had smitten Gulvig, and in the hall of Hor had burned her, three times burned and three times born, oft and again, yet ever she lives." So the Aesir gods capture this Vanir god, Gulvig, stab her a bunch, burn her three times to death, and she keeps coming back to life, essentially.
Burn me once.
Yeah, exactly. Well, burn me twice.
It's the highest level technology they had, right? They only had the one thing to try. They can't shoot her and burn her.
Yeah. Right. Burn me once, shame on me. Or shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. Burn me three. Please stop burning me.
Yeah, it's right.
Yeah. So this stabbing and burning, widely regarded as the driving force for the war between the Aesir and Vanir.
Okay.
When I just said the almost second Vanir in our story, when talking about Gulvig, I mean by a popular interpretation of the poem and of Gulvig by scholars. So this is from Daniel McCoy. "The Vanir goddess Freya was always the foremost practitioner of the art of satyr, the most terrifically powerful kind of magic. Like historical satyr practitioners, she wandered from town to town plying her craft for hire. Under the name Hadir, which means bright, she eventually came to Asgard, the home of the Aesir. The Aesir were quite taken by her powers and zealously sought her services. But soon they realized that their values of honor, kin loyalty, and obedience to the law were being pushed aside by the selfish desires they sought to fulfill with the witch's magic. Blaming Freya for their own shortcomings, the Aesir called her Gulvig, gold greed, and attempted to murder her. Three times they tried to burn her, and three times she was reborn from the ashes." So
okay.
This is Freya was Gulvig, was captured by the Aesir. They used her to do magic, and then they realized, like, using magic makes us lazy, you know. Being able to work from home really has made me not want to do any work at all. So, you know,
the Aesir just have a bunch of empty skyscrapers they're paying rent on for nothing. Yeah, they're trying to get people to come back to Asgard.
Yeah. And they're like, it's her fault. So they blame Freya. I think this really sets the stage for God of War's take on the Freya Odin relationship, right? While Freya does eventually marry the hoary old Cyclops and bear his son, Baldur, she does mention in a cutscene in God of War 4 having a tricky relationship with the Asgardian.
Is Odin trying to spy on Freya that whole game? I can't remember. With the
Freya gives you the mark to hide from his gaze, essentially. Oh. It's, so I would say it's safe to assume that Freya can probably hide from him.
She ain't Freya, no ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. Also makes her feel good. So the Aesir Vanir War wages for some time, with the Asgardians using good old-fashioned sword and board, while the Vanir stuck to more magical attacks, and they traded pole position for a time. So neither side's kind of gaining an upper hand. Here's another quote from Daniel McCoy. Eventually, the two tribes of divinities became weary of fighting and decided to call a truce. As was customary among the ancient Norse and other Germanic peoples, the two sides agreed to pay tribute to each other by sending hostages to live among the other tribe. Freyr, and Njord of the Vanir went to the Aesir, and Hainir and Mimir went to the Vanir.
Oh.
So they trade hostages to broker a peace in the Norse myth, but it's implied in the games that Freya's marriage was one of necessity, not love. When describing how she is forbidden from leaving Midgard, one of you mentioned that earlier, how like she can't go back home to Vanaheim. When you're talking about that scene with Atreus, because she basically has like a window portal to Vanaheim that she can look through, so it feels like she's home. Freya calls her inability to leave Midgard a gift from my former husband upon our separation. Petty cruelty would be reason enough for him, but as with all his rash decisions, he is driven by fear. The Vanir were the greatest threat to the Aesir until our marriage brokered peace. So in the games, it seems like maybe not a trading of hostages, but just a marriage of alliance.
Okay. Right. Yeah. You've got like the king of the aggressors is just like, give me your hippie queen and her bare feet. And they're just like, okay.
Yeah. So why ever or however the two decide, Freya and Odin do tie the knot. It's not all long after the hitch that Freya gives birth to a bouncing baby boy, Baldur.
10 months later, there was performance issues.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got one eye and one ball, actually.
Sure, I'd imagine that'd be a really painful childbirth for her. Obviously, he would feel nothing, but sure, like just like for this imagery, like it would probably suck having that kid. He seems like a bad kid.
Yeah. Baldur?
Yeah.
In the games, he seems like a bad kid. In the Norse myth, he's generally loved. And we'll talk about why they definitely position him as like a real, real shithead in the games.
But he's in the game, he's gone insane, right?
Yeah. I've never actually played Baldur's Gate, so I don't know what Baldur's like normally, but.
Anyway, so Freya gives birth to Baldur, the shithead in the games. Coming up after the break, we have the life and death of Baldur.
There we go. That bang will let me know exactly where the break starts. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Baldur was one of the most beloved of all the gods. The son of Odin, the chief of the gods, and the benevolent sorceress goddess Freya, Baldur was a generous, joyful, and courageous character who gladdened the hearts of all who spent time with him. When, therefore, he began to have ominous dreams of some grave misfortune befalling him, the fearful gods appointed Odin to discover their meaning. That's a quote from Daniel McCoy on his site, norsemythology.org.
Friend of the show at this point.
Exactly, right?
Mr. McCoy.
In God of War 4, Freya, when trying to convince Kratos to tell his son Atreus of the boy's own divinity, Freya talks about her own son when he was born and how there was a prophecy of how he would die. Mm.
I can't stop thinking of the bonus track that you released that was just my only voice. Like, and you guys are both cut out because now every small noise I make, I'm like, it feels so isolated, you know, like every breath,
James standing out here naked. He's got the podium in front of him hiding his shame, you know?
I feel like you guys aren't here with me all the time, you know, after that event. Okay. So Baldur, he's cool. He's likable.
He's very cool in the Norse myth. So Peter was saying before you were both kind of saying before the break there that, yeah, he's a real shithead in the game. Like, he's very cocky and arrogant. And you don't, the entire game, you don't know what he fucking wants with you. He's just like chasing you relentlessly. And I kind of alluded to it earlier, and we'll get into it in a little bit about how he's not chasing you. He's chasing your wife, and your wife's ashes, essentially.
Yeah.
Freya tells the story when Atreus is dying because he doesn't know that he's a god and his mortality is warring with his divinity, essentially.
Is that what's happening in that scene? That's like when you meet Freya, isn't it? You like
not the first time you meet Freya. When you meet Freya, you kill the boar, but then right. At some point, Atreus, you fight Magni and Modi, I think. This is before that. Anyway, Atreus starts to become sick, which is something that's been hinted at throughout the game. Kratos is always telling Atreus, like, no, don't do that. The sickness might come back, and he's like, oh, I haven't been sick in years. Blah blah blah. And you find out it's because Kratos never told him that he's a god. And so it's like, that's making him sick somehow. And Freya
is like a Victorian orphan. It's just like, no, Freya, the whooping cough has come back.
Yeah, exactly. it's like, I don't know why. It's like, I don't know why he keeps getting sick. Now get back up that chimney and sweep.
Yeah.
Like, my life depended on it. So Freya's trying to save Atreus's life here. She's telling Kratos what he needs to do to save Atreus.
Are gods in this context kind of like Tinkerbell, where it's like if fairies die if you don't believe in them, where like if you don't know you're a god, you kill yourself? Is the faith that keeps gods alive?
No, I don't think so.
It feels like something like god puberty or whatever. Like, so like if imagine you're going through puberty, but you didn't know that was supposed to happen to you. You'd be like, there's all these changes. I'm all fucked up. I don't know what's wrong with me. Yeah. But it's like, no, okay. That's just like your godly power. Just
what have you done, Kratos? Yeah, you never given him the talk. You never showed him a VHS from the 70s. What were you thinking? Just like putting it into a cauldron and like mixing it around.
Yeah, exactly.
On the magnetic tape out of a cassette.
Yeah, you might get all depressed too if you had all these urges and didn't know how to bust a nut. So
Carpet hair, the urge to destroy the world of men is
Freya's trying to save Atreus while also telling the story about how like her son was, there was a prophecy of how her son would die, which we're gonna learn is pretty ironic. The player does not know two key things when playing this at this point in the game to realize how important this conversation is. The first thing, that Baldur, the enigmatic figure who has seemingly been chasing Kratos and Atreus across all of creation, is the son of Freya. And the player also does not yet know who exactly Kratos' son Atreus is. So why was the son of Freya chasing Kratos? The truth we learn at the end of the game is that he wasn't. He was chasing Faye, Kratos' late wife, and Atreus' mother, as father and son take her ashes to spread on the highest peak in all the realms. So why was Baldur chasing a dead person, right? Well, throughout the game, Kratos is fairly convinced that his wife was just a regular old lady, but the truth waited for him at the end of their journey. She had asked Kratos to spread her ashes at the highest peak in all the realms. He had taken this to mean she wanted to be memorialized at a nearby mountain, the tallest peak Kratos is aware of in the area. When they arrive, however, Mimir, still fused with the tree, tells them that the highest peak is actually in Jotunheim, right?
Right. That's the giant land.
That's the land of the giants. We talked at length about Jotunheim in our last God of War episode about how it, you know, it stems from the word Utgard, which just means outside the fence. It essentially refers to just
makes sense, like, man.
Wilderness.
Bigger people, bigger mountains. You know, that's funny how it works out that way. Like, is their whole planet to scale of the giants? Are they on, like, are their whole realm? Do they have a bigger realm?
Like big spoons? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. If you brought a spoon through, would it be a normal spoon or a big spoon? I don't know.
Well, Kratos and Atreus don't get bigger when they do get there.
Well, maybe. We don't know. It might be a scale thing.
No, you can see them in the distance. You see all the corpses of the giants in the distance, right?
Right.
So yeah, we talked at length about Jotunheim in the last episode. It's the home of the giants. Sure enough, Fae had asked her ashes to be spread in Jotunheim because she was a giant all along. And Fae wasn't big. Lao Fae wasn't big as far as we know. Like, their house was regular size, and Kratos is a pretty normal, like, tall dude, but pretty normal size. So,
Atreus, the child, is all, like, very, like, visibly, like, 9-10 years old, too. And he's, like, regular size, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Being 30 feet tall is a recessive gene. That's actually a spoiler for Ragnarok. That's the one that I'll... That's the one I'll throw in there. It skips a generation.
Yeah. That would suck, man. It would suck for the mothers in the small generation having to have all the big kids.
Yeah.
No, it turns out you guys are both just dumb. The giants in Norse myth aren't necessarily big. Giant in modern English is its own thing. It's like a bad anglicization of the word. Giant never in Old Norse meant anything to do with being big. In Norse, giant, or more accurately, jotun or thurs, would have meant alternately devourer, powerful and injurious one, or thorn-like. That's what giant means. It doesn't mean big at all.
Thorn-like.
Yeah.
Like, I almost wanted to make a comment like, giants aren't necessarily big. It's just a separate race. But I couldn't remember if you explained that to me or if it was somewhere else.
We talked about that during the last episode.
Okay. Thank God. Yeah. Damn. My anti-spoiler brain. I just can't say anything. at present, on my second beer, I don't remember where I got this information.
honestly, Pete, there's like one thing that I think might be spoiled for me in this. But we're about to get into some more.
You can't see my eyebrows, so it doesn't matter.
Guess.
I'll guess the ending of all the God of Wars is that Atreus needs to kill Kratos.
Kratos?
Yeah.
Pete, and it's like a really sad moment. Pete, does that have the end of the
eyebrows? Oh, he's moving his eyebrows. that would be some nice symmetry too, because Kratos kills all his daddy and everything, right?
Yeah,
he does. He does kill Zeus. Sort of. He's in Helheim too. He's still clearly alive and watching everything he does.
Gods are weird. Just a quick point on your thorn-like one being interesting. So we did talk last week about Jotunheim, like the land of the giants, is literally like the savage lands or the wilderness outside of civilization. So like thorn-like being the root of that being like very thorny place makes a lot of sense, right? Oh, that was an interesting connection.
The like uncut brambles on the edge of the Viking property, right?
Yeah, right. Like we talked about it last week, but it like Utgard is another word for Jotunheim, which is just outside the fence. So anything outside the fence is a civilization, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
You did. We talked about it last time at length.
I didn't know that this time, so. So I'm still valid.
Jamie's the easiest guy to impress in these episodes. Just tell him something you told him just last week, and he's amazed all over again.
Your God War episode was like 5-6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. I'm joking. So I think longer, honestly. So the giants in Norse myth are destined to end, and the God of War trilogy are destined to end the world in a war against the Aesir. Called Ragnarok, right?
Okay.
It's the end of all things. However,
that's what Ragnarok is the war?
It's the end of the world.
The end of the world, right, which we talked about last time.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that after three winters a winter spanning three summers passes and
Fimbulwinter.
however, at the end of God of War, Kratos and Atreus see that Jotun is a dead place, full of only the corpses of the Jotun who have fallen, presumably by to Odin's machinations. We kind of know that Thor went and killed them all at some point. So how they're going to show up and kill all the Aesir in Ragnarok remains to be seen. But there's still some giants around, right? For sure. We also learn at that time that Fae had wanted a different name for Atreus, which was Loki.
Right.
So that's the big spoiler, right? That Loki is actually your son. And I swear to God, I remember only one time for a split second. I remember I was like in the boat in God of War, because a lot of the travel scenes are like you're in a canoe. And I remember canoeing through this like canyon and just being like, I wonder if like Loki's going to feature in these games at all. And then like promptly like filing that away and like never thought about it again. Then we got to the end of the game and I was like, oh my God, there it is.
You did a good job of keeping that secret low key up until now.
Yeah, exactly. I kept it low key to myself. Though,
The realms of God of War 4 are super dead. You don't encounter, other than Magni and Modi as like kind of like demi or like like mini bosses, you don't encounter any gods at all in that game.
Freya.
Yeah, that's true, but you don't know at the time.
Mimir. No. Mimir is an Aesir, so you do encounter Mimir as well.
Okay.
But I mean,
there's like, if you beat the game on the hardest difficulty, you can see Thor's hammer after the credits.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even that. You see his hammer, like you see Thor after the credits, right?
You don't see his face. Isn't he like silhouetted? Then you see his hammer because he keep that thing strapped, right?
You don't need to do it on the hardest difficulty. You just need to go back to your house at the end of the game.
Oh, wow, I never did that. Never mind.
I did.
Whoa. Did you back where you buried your chain blades or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're under the floorboards.
Yeah. Chaos blades.
Is it chaos blades?
Loki, turns out you're Shen. Great, great twist. We're going to talk about Loki for a good while now. He's Thor and Odin and Loki are probably the three most, like, there's the most stories about these three, right? Where Loki is almost always the heel. Like, he's always the one causing mischief or, like, driving the stories in a way because, like, oh, Loki did something that, like, this hero has to fix or something like that.
Loki's a trickster god. Also, very common husky name. I've seen a lot of Loki's. Really? Loki's and Lunas. Yeah. Okay. Loki if it's a boy, Luna if it's a girl, and that's a good husky name, yeah.
You probably thank Marvel for that. I honestly think, like, Marvel, you know, say what you want about the movies, then that, you know, they're not our cinematic masterpieces, but
one in there.
the Marvel character Loki does a good job of being like the same kind of character before his, and I don't know if how many of them you guys have seen, but like before he kind of has like a bit of a redemption in one of the later Avengers movies or something like that. But he like when he's originally like working with kind of the bad guys to like capture the Infinity Stones and stuff, that is more like Loki style, but being very much a trickster, very much willing to put other people in the line of fire, never kind of himself.
Right. Okay.
So according to Norse myth, Loki is the son of the giant Farbauti, and Laufey, the meaning of which is unknown, is his mother, right? Which is his mother, so they in the just game.
Replaced his dad with Kratos in the game's fiction.
Okay, you remember when I said that I think the writers, when they were first drafting this, they checked Norse myth and stuff just fucking fell into place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The giant Farbauti, nothing is known about him. Okay. Farbauti, his name, he's only ever mentioned twice in the Poetic Edda, and each time it's to refer to Loki as his son. So it's always, okay, it's never like Farbauti did this, it's Farbauti's son Loki did this. So I'm always talking about Loki.
Okay.
His name means cruel striker. Like, okay, is that not the perfect name for Kratos?
Yeah.
Like, especially early Kratos, yeah.
Like, it's just, and it's like, nothing else is known about him. They just know that he's Loki's dad. That's all that they know about. They call him a giant, but...
Oh, yeah, I guess
the giant can be of any size. He comes from the outside of civilization, as far as the Norse know, which would make him a Jotun in some ways.
Or from Sparta, like Kratos is, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a thorny guy.
Very thorny guy.
Very prickly.
I read that. I was like, cruel striker is just like the perfect name for, like, the perfect nickname for Kratos, right? Like, he's cruel. Yeah, he's a striker.
I love how the original intent of the God of War trilogy was to have, like, the Star of Bethlehem post-credit in God of War 3 and the Three Wise Men. And it's like, I don't know, that's probably really hard. Whereas just like, no, they just wrote everything pre-Beowulf for us, and we're just going to swap out. We're just going to swap Kratos in.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. That's perfect. What would you want to be called if you had a cool name like that? A cruel striker, just something, a two-word thing that you could call yourself at any
big
time.
Big eggplant.
Dude, I was going to say Big Dickus.
Okay. Well, I want to be Big Eggplant because I'm a vegetarian. I care very much about being vegetarian. Eggplant's a great vegetarian dish.
Right.
More meat, unethical. That's what you're
getting. Less dick, more eggplant.
Yes, yes, to keep the meat percentage of his body as low as possible.
Well, you get along really well with those, what was it, Elish Norn? She's trying to keep the meat low too. You know, you got to keep the cybernetics high. The meat low.
Trying to keep the meat balanced. Yeah. Got to balance the meat, you know? So yeah, I think Loreboy's canon, maybe Kratos will be, maybe already has been called Farbauti at some point, but I don't know. I feel like that name's going to come back somehow or some way. Like somebody's going to say that's the nickname that they gave you, or somebody's going to call him Cruel Striker or something like that, because it just fits too perfectly.
He came from far and leaves behind bodies.
He stacks bodies. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as far as Kratos and Loki are concerned, at least not in the god killer sense. The giants in Norse myth don't have a particular affinity for the gods, and Loki has fathered a few prominent figures in those stories. So by the giantess Angerboda, also known as the mother of monsters, the one who brings grief, she who offers sorrow and harm bitter.
Jeez. Loki, any giants sire- marry this one or what?
Loki sires a real superstar cast of renegade monsters. No, Loki bangs her a bunch. To sire some monsters. So Atreus in the games sleeps with Angerboda to sire a bunch of monsters, essentially.
My dad didn't tell me that I was a god until I was a teenager, so now I sleep with this mentally ill giant.
Not mentally ill, very powerful. The mother of monsters, dude. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, she doesn't sound very stable.
I mean, fair. So they sire a bunch of children. Of those names, Hel, the goddess of the underworld, Jormungand, the serpent who slays Thor during Ragnarok, and Fenrir, the wolf who bites off one of the hands of Tyr and who kills Odin during Ragnarok.
Okay.
So, of the listed three, in God of War 4, Jormungand features heavily, while both Fenrir and Hel are not seen. Anyone who's played the game, like Peter, might be scratching their head at this point, because if Atreus is Loki, he seems awful young to have spawned a big old snake as old as time who circles the world. We talked a lot about Jormungand on the last episode.
Time travel.
So my best guess, it's time is a flat circle, time travel shenanigans. They talk about like the end of the world and the cycle of time, right? It's fully canon in the game that Atreus did or does bang a giantess named Angerboda and sires Jormungand and the rest.
Okay.
So
no, Atreus, there are consequences to hitting it raw.
What if Kratos is actually Ares and he started this whole internal struggle on himself?
Well, no, he kills Ares in the first game.
Yeah, he killed himself. That was his future self who started this all.
After Tyr went back in time to file the paperwork that set off the five games.
That we have thus far,
of course.
So the giants seem to be the ones who have the most control over like time. The Vanir are kind of the mages. But Tyr was also known to work very closely with the giants. Okay, this I just remembered this bit too. But just tying into the Ares bit. Tyr was known to travel to other cultures, and there's like murals in the game as you're descending down his temple that show him in like in China and like in these other places. And in the basement, Kratos finds a vase that has a picture of himself on it.
Oh, right. That's true.
Right. For sure. He went to Greece and he collected that stuff. And it's like a picture of like, oh, wow. Okay. I just remember that. So I didn't think enough about it to talk about it on the podcast.
I like how you really make like canon predictions for a game that's already out too.
Yeah.
It's people at home.
Spoiler for myself.
Well, yeah. What we're doing now is like lore boys canoning the writer's room.
Yeah, exactly.
If the three of us can come up with that in what 40 minutes, I'm pretty sure professional video game writers may have stumbled across that. Like, hey, what if he was a tourist God of War sort of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so many of these things fall into place, and like I said, it's good storytelling.
Yeah,
where like
it
seems everything seems so deliberate that I have to believe that. Like, I do think that they were like testing different pantheons. They got to Norse. They're like, well, this just works fucking good.
Yeah.
So
I found a guy who writes stuff. His name's Mr. McCoy, and they're just like, yeah, print it out multiple copies.
How about we just go next? Like, less serious for the next one. So for the next pantheon, just all the mascots off of cereal boxes.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, so just like Kratos just fucking uppercutting like Tony the Tiger. Yeah, or just like smashing like, the Lucky Charms guy just getting his neck cut by the two chain blades.
Well, yeah, because it's God of War at its core is a Metroidvania with like action gameplay, right? So you would need to kill, like, there would be like a pathway you can't cross until you kill the Lucky Charms leprechaun, and then you can use his pot of gold to create like a light bridge to solve puzzles, right?
You get a magic sift that lets you sift out just the marshmallows.
Yes.
Okay, so pretty sure it's time travel. So I did mention that he Loki, Sires Jormungand.
Snap, Crackle, Pop would be the worst boss. I bet it'd be so fucking annoying, all three of them.
It would be like three stages where you'd get like Snap would start, you'd get him down to 75%, then Crackle comes in. He's got less HP, like the gargoyles in Dark Souls, basically.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then Pop is when they all fuse into their third stage, which does way more damage, right?
Yeah. The milk comes in and he starts like popping and going insane.
Or you have to platform up while the milk rises because the milk's an instant kill.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So Jormungand is in the games. Loki fathers Jormungand, who is the Great Serpent. He's said to slay Thor during Ragnarok, and Fenrir is the one who bit off Tyr's hand, is also the one who will kill Odin during Ragnarok. And Hel is the goddess of the underworld, right?
Okay.
So, it's pretty much confirmed from my point of view that Atreus, Loki, or at least Loki, is the one who sired this in the game. We think it's time travel. When talking to Freya after meeting the world serpent, Atreus remarks, "I'm good with languages, even ones I hadn't heard before, but when he talks, I can't understand any of it," which is like a weird detail to include, that he understood all these other languages that he didn't get, but I'm gonna guess it's just because of like some time travel shenanigans that it's like, you know, Marty McFly in Back to the Future, like he couldn't have understood his own language or something, or he'd erase the time loop, you know, damage the timeline kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
Loki gets back to the 80s and no one speaks English anymore. It's just like,
So throughout the game, there are Jotnar shrines, which are built by the giants to commemorate people or places and drop some lore. That's the scenes that I was just describing about Tyr traveling to different worlds are a Jotnar shrine as you're descending into Tyr's temple, which are the three paneled shrines, essentially, right?
It's the giant wardrobes with
and it's just got a mural inside of it. So one of those shrines is dedicated, of course, to the giant Jormungandr, and the left panel shows Angerboda breastfeeding the young serpent. The text below, Angerboda is Jormungandr's mom, right? So she's breastfeeding him as a baby. The text below that mural says, "Son of Loki and Angerboda, brother of Fenrir, Hel, and the Iron Wolves." So confirmed, Jormungandr is Loki's son. At the very least, we know
snakes aren't supposed to breastfeed, man. Yeah, isn't that weird to think of a snake breastfeeding?
And
the
snakes ain't got no boobies.
Yeah. Is it like blowing up one of them long balloons?
Yeah.
Like it just fills up with milk and gets completely solid.
Okay, so I said brother of Fenrir, Hel, and the Iron Wolves for Jormungandr, and I thought the Iron Wolves stood out, so I did some research on them. I have a quote here from the Prose Edda. "A witch dwells to the east of Midgard in the forest called Ironwood. In that wood dwell the troll women, who are known as Ironwood women. The old witch bears many giants for sons, and all in the shape of wolves. And from this source are these wolves sprung. The saying runs thus: from this race shall come one that shall be mightiest of all. He that is named Moonhound or Managarmer, he shall be filled with the flesh of all those men that die, and he shall swallow the moon." So at Ragnarok,
I have to say the beginning of that quote had so many W's. Like, you don't get that many W's. A witch dwells in the east of the wood. Like, I felt like it was, from my internet brain, thought it was going to be one of them ooh-ooh posts, because there's so many times. A witch dwells in the woods.
Yeah, just giving birth to nothing but wolves. It's pretty cool.
Me trying to read Norse mythology to Jamie, being like, "Can you make it like an ooh-ooh or a copy pasta for me, please? My attention span, Dad."
I need some mobile gameplay on one of these streams here so I can focus on what you're saying.
So I mentioned the wolf Managarmr. Garm is wolf or hound in Norse, so that's Moonhound. Managarmr is mentioned in the game once alongside another wolf god, Skoll, who in the myth are variably considered to be different facets of Fenrir. They might be Fenrir, they might be unique wolves, who kind of knows. Managarmr and Skoll are featured in the wolf puzzle in Tyr's Vault, where you have to get Managarmr, called Hati in the game. He's also called Hati in the myth, which means hatred. You have to get him to swallow the moon and Skoll to swallow the sun, or Kratos drowns.
It's a Hati with a far body.
Exactly. So in the myth, when Ragnarok comes, Managarmr, this wolf, or Hati, this wolf will devour the moon, and Skoll will devour the sun. At Ragnarok.
Okay.
And there, these are the Iron Wolves, and the, and there are other wolf brothers that come from this place called the Iron Wolf, the Ironwood, excuse me.
Cool.
So Loki, however, does not necessarily leave the dirty work of god killing to his, only to his progeny. Okay. He also sometimes leaves it up to people who are foolish enough to listen to his silver tongue. So another excerpt from Daniel McCoy. Loki is perhaps best known for his malevolent role in the death of Baldur. After the death of the beloved god Baldur is prophesied, Baldur's mother Frigg secures a promise from every living thing not to harm her son. Well, almost everything. No such oath is obtained from the mistletoe, which the gods think too small and safe a thing to harm Baldur.
I thought they were interviewing all of creation. Just like, all right, what do you want? Don't kill Baldur. And the one person who didn't show, but like that would suggest also like a queue of plants making a promise.
Absolutely. She got, so on Daniel McCoy's site here, he says every living, he got a promise from every living thing. On another, in the actual, on his page on the actual death of Baldur, he says everything living and non-living. So the myth is like Freya went Fox around. Too. Yeah. Freya went around with her like, you know, CIA wet work specialists.
Of course.
With her, and they just like tortured oaths out of everybody and said like, you're not going to harm Baldur. You're not going to harm Baldur. And then Mistletoe, I guess, is the white guy in this analogy. And just like he got, they just like, okay, we're not going to torture you, but like, you're cool. He's like, yeah, sure. No problem. So early on in the game, God of War 4, the dwarf Sindri gifts Atreus some arrows made of, wouldn't you know, mistletoe. Whether or not the dwarf knew of their potential is hard to say. It is established that the dwarven brothers do not look kindly upon the Aesir, particularly Thor, who uses their magnum opus to genocide the Jotun, and they are pretty explicitly against that in the game. They also seem to be like very cunning and very wise. They kind of seem like smart people playing, you know, the fool in a lot of senses, but they seem extremely powerful and they can just slip between the realms. Sindri can be invisible, so he could in theory be in like any room at any time and you wouldn't even know, right?
There's like early on in that game when he tosses the apple to Kratos, which is a great comedy scene. Mm-hmm. Where he like throws an apple to Kratos, who just lifts up his axe and bisects it and just doesn't even react. He's like, eh, okay. yeah, like Sindri explains how he doesn't teleport per se, but like dwarf magic is like finding the meaning in reality or something like that. So he just becomes unreal.
Yeah, he can like slip off of the weave or something like that. We talked a lot about the dwarves in the last episode, but like it kind of heavily implies... Like, why else would he give Atreus mistletoe arrows of all things, right? Like, mistletoe is not known for being particularly good arrows, as far as I know.
Dwarves being really good with, like, stone and, like, this hardest surface and being able to navigate deep underground, too. Like, being able to weave out of reality for a second and be like, oh, the nearest cavern's all the way down there, and then pop back in and dig and stuff. And
So, another continuing the quote from McCoy. After these oaths were secured, the gods made a sport out of the situation. They threw sticks, rocks, anything else on hand at Baldur, and everyone laughed as these things bounced off and left the shining god unharmed. The wily and disloyal Loki sensed an opportunity for mischief. Immediately, upon hearing that the mistletoe was Baldur's only weakness, Loki departed, located the mistletoe, carved a spear out of it, and brought it to where the gods were playing their new favorite game. He approached the blind god Hodir and said, "You must feel quite left out, having to sit back here away from the merriment, not being given a chance to show Baldur the honor of proving his invincibility." The blind god concurred. "Here," said Loki, handing him the shaft of mistletoe, "I will point your hand in the direction where Baldur stands, and you throw this branch at him." So Hod threw the mistletoe, it pierced the god straight through, and he fell down, dead on the spot.
Okay.
Again, Loki doesn't do his own dirty work. He, you know, convinces this old blind guy to do it for him.
Oh, I saw this. Patsy. Sweetest moment between a blind person and their service dog today. Sorry to, I'll do it really fast, but there was someone's crossing and a car came flying through and like almost hit this blind person, and their dog stopped them like at the side of the road, like just before the car was coming.
Good doggo.
The very good doggo did their job. The person who was being an asshole driving very much shouldn't have been driving that way. And they got across the street and the owner went down and hugged the dog.
Aww.
I like literally teared up. I was like, that is a beautiful moment, man. That was, so cute.
If only Hodir had a seeing eye dog to stop him from taking a mistletoe spear from Loki.
Yeah.
One of those dogs who was supposed to like tear the sun out of the sky could have been helping him.
Yeah. It's Hodir blind, but his pointing stick has got the spear on the end.
just poking the corpse of Baldur. Really. So in the game, Loki's part here is not as actively deliberate. Again, you know, how does time travel work? Like, what are Brock and Sindri's involvement? You know, like, all, like, how does fate work in this game? We don't really know. Maybe with time travel being what it is, Loki like told Brock and Sindri in the past to do, to give him the arrows in the future. Like, we just don't know.
Right. Yeah. Because he doesn't even have them in his quiver, right? He clips the arrowhead onto his like belt or something.
Yeah. So anyone who knows who knew the Norse myth while they were playing the game must have just been watching that like one little piece of mistletoe just track its merry way back to Baldur. Like, if you knew this story from the Norse myth, you must have just been like, when this moment happened, you must have just been like, ah, here we go. That's perfect. So sometime after receiving the gift from Sindri, Atreus's quiver of arrows breaks. Kratos draws one out and uses the mistletoe shaft to bind it back into place across his chest and puts the rest of his mistletoe arrows back in his quiver. So he's still got a full quiver of mistletoe arrows.
Right, that's it. Yeah, it's like a safety pin, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it's a good thing he does bind it. It's a good thing the strap broke. It's a good thing that he does bind it that way again, because the next time the duo sees Freya, she's none too happy about the quiver full of sun-killing bullets on Atreus's back.
It's like you walk into her house and you've got like the plastic thing of peanuts. She's like, no. Yeah. And then like throws all the peanuts in the fire.
Exactly. Yeah. So when Kratos and Atreus bring her Mimir's head for resurrection, the first thing she notices is the arrows on Atreus's back. She says, wait, where did you get those? Give them to me now. These arrows are dangerous. They're wicked. You find any more, you destroy them. Understand? And she's like yelling at Atreus here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, and she knows there's a prophecy that, you know, to kill her son, and how they're gonna make it in the game that she knew that mistletoe was actually dangerous. You know, I don't know why she doesn't just like take the arrow and be like, promise you won't kill my son, and then be like, okay, cool, fine, finally got the last one. You
know, yeah. I guess that is like in service of the writing, because despite having finished both current God of War games, current PS4 God of War games, I can say they're perfect, but there is like some conceits to the plot you need to make. Right, in that, no, like, course, yeah. if Freya was just like, hey, whoa, mistletoe was gonna kill my son, thus setting off the events that would destroy the world or whatever, right, it's just like, well, then there's not really a video game. It's just like, okay, we'll be safe.
Here's the thing though, Kratos wouldn't have cared. Kratos would have been like, tell your son to leave me alone, I'm going to spread my wife's ashes, and Baldur would have kept chasing
him. Of course. Yeah,
so it's like that almost could have worked too, but I think making it the twist or the reveal, and like, what's really cool is that, or cool, I don't know if this is cool, maybe it's just cool for me, but like, this is never revealed in the game that she had like a promise from only mistletoe is the only thing that could harm Baldur. Well, like, it turns out it was, but you don't know you don't really learn the backstory behind it at all in the game.
Wait till you get to the end of Norse mythology though, and you find out mistletoe is really a Christmas kissing thing the whole time.
It is. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Your son was destined to kiss my son. Throw away these arrows.
So yeah, in the climactic final fight with Baldur, Kratos is getting his shit kicked in. He's losing the fight against somebody who cannot be harmed, cannot be killed. Like,
and does not feel pain.
Yeah, they're going. Yeah, that's cannot be harmed. But they're going blow for blow for like so long. You're on the arm of a giant who's been like resurrected by Freya, and you're like throwing each other off of it and through stuff and getting crushed by things. But Baldur just keeps coming back, and Kratos like eventually starts to tire. You know, like he's start to lose. And so much so that he's like eventually like on his knees, catching his breath, and Atreus puts himself between the two. Baldur, sure enough, swings a punch straight into Atreus's chest, breaks the only arrow remaining and piercing his own hand, killing himself.
Oh yeah, that's true. I did love that scene when an adult man sucker punches a, at the time, I think, 10-year-old boy in the chest, and he's just like, ooh,
yeah. It's great because there's like this like splash of blood, and Atreus is like doesn't have his breath. He's like, he's trying to catch his breath to say not my blood, and it's because it's Baldur's blood. And then the camera pans. He's got it piercing his hand. Like,
yeah,
very good. So no matter how he dies, Baldur, his death always means one thing. Another quote from McCoy to close us out. Immediately after Baldur is pierced by Loki's spear or this mistletoe brooch, the gods found themselves unable to speak, as they trembled with anguish and fear. They knew that this event was the first presage of Ragnarok, the downfall and death, not just of themselves, but of the very cosmos they maintained. And that's God of War 4. Baldur, Freya, and the Trickster God. Eventually, I'll play the next game, and I will do this again, because these have been easily some of my favorite episodes ever to research. If you guys like the show, consider leaving us.
You're gonna love it, definitely. Yeah.
Good.
Wait, can I make a call out? I wanted to go first after you.
If you guys like the show, consider leaving us a review or telling your friends. Jamie, what do you want to say?
I wanted to put a call to action for the listeners. If you guys like are listening through and you find like a really good isolated like 30 second to a minute clip of like a bit, because I don't listen to our stuff, so it's hard for me to like find a timestamp. If you find a timestamp of like something that stands alone and you think is funny, please send in the timestamp to us. I'm looking to like make a couple reels or maybe throw in a TikTok or two just for show engagement and stuff. And it's hard to just find those bits, and you guys will know them the best. So
it's out of context quotes, but with context.
Yeah. Like make it so you don't really need to have a knowledge of the Lore Boys. Imagine a joke that would be funny to a friend who had never heard the show before. Cause that's
or a joke that's funny to your parents, right? Like the true normies.
Yeah, yeah. Or
Gen Z.
That's true. I mean, yeah, something that's true to the spirit of the show or anything like that. Yeah. But anyways, just if you'd send any of those to James, then I can start putting those together, and I'll give you a shout out if your thing is chosen.
That's James at james.james. No, you can send it to James on Discord. There's a link to our Discord server in the description of this episode. So click that if you want to check it out. It's also discord.gg/theloreboys for now.
Or Lore Boys, just Lore Boys.
Discord.gg/loreboys for now.
Yeah, we almost lost our boost today. So thank you to, I think Avocado Man came in with the clutch, and then Darnell gave us a couple make us real comfortable.
Yeah. Exactly. Thanks to everyone who's boosted the server so far. Pete, what's going on with Instagram and or you?
Fun employed, been great. comic should be out this summer. I'm on track for the Montreal Comic Con at this point. Instagram, send us messages, send us memes. Play God of War Ragnarok after listening to this episode, because I have never had more difficulty in my life going ever. This episode
did a great job.
You did good.
Improve,
yeah.
Did a great job. This episode will improve that game for you, because you'll just be like, absolutely just like sweating bullets over the research these people have done.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram, at Squared Idea for my publisher. Don't worry about the layoffs. I'm doing great. I'm not going to lie. So,
dude, he's doing just fine, okay?
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get access to bonus content once a week. This, like I said at the top of the show, this was a poll decision to do this episode, so you can vote on future episodes if you want. There will also be bonus lore, like I said earlier, like what happens after Baldur dies. Why don't they just go to hell and resurrect him? They're gods, right? Other gods have resurrected. Why not Baldur? I'll tell you why. It's a funny story. And those come out every Thursday. We also play games like the Loser Titles, which might not be the most interesting game this week because people voted on it, so you guys might know what it was. But maybe you guys forgot. You guys are small brain sometimes. And of course, if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Lore Boys Prime, as always, where we will be taking oaths from people to not harm us. Okay, we're trying to get oaths from every listener to not harm the Lore Boys, and we're not going to do that.
But the last listener, I told that they figured out the loophole that pain is what the harm is, so they just filled me up with painkillers, and then they could hit me all they want, and then I wasn't harmed until the next day.
That sounds like a win-win for you.
Yeah. Maybe. <yeah. laughs> Load me up and beat me, babies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten oaths from pretty much everybody so far, except for Bray, but he's harmless. I'm sure he'll never. I'm sure Bray will never do anything to come back and kill me. I mean, that's not Bray. Bray wouldn't. So.
Yeah. Oaths from the oafs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Would like grab Bray by the backpack straps and get stabbed in the hand by a raw piece of vegetable to give him a tummy ache.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I'd be scared of Bray stalking. Imagine just like pitch black, you're in your bedroom, and now you hear the flick of a lizard's tongue smelling the room to where you are. You know,
I mean, it's not pitch black. You're in your house, and all the lights go out because he's an electrician. So,
That's true. An electrician and a lizard wizard.
Uh-oh. An electric, those are different an electric lizard wizard.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Out.
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 Out. Freya. Freya. Freya.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.